This episode is brought to you by Outdoor Class. Outdoor Class is an online video platform geared towards making you a better hunter. Watch instructional videos taught by hunting experts like Remy Warren, Randy Newberg, and Corey Jacobson. After the hunt, learn how to prepare your harvest from world-class wild game chefs like Hank Shaw and Jamie Tagan. Whether it's your first year hunting or you grew up doing it, Outdoor Class will take your skills up a notch. Use code EMPIRE20 at checkout to save 20% off. Visit OutdoorClass.com to learn more. What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast, which is brought to you by Tacticam. This is your home for all things outdoors in the Badger State, and I am your host, Josh Rayleigh. Thank you so much for tuning in with us this week as we are kind of rounding the corner into Christmas time. This is it, man. You guys are probably out getting ready for Christmas parties, and all the hustle and bustle and the busyness and all of that that goes along with the season is there. Not to mention, this is that time of year really when a lot of guys start winding down. Even if you've still got a buck tag or maybe some doe tags in your pocket, you're probably starting to hunt a little bit less than you were before. Now, I know some of you are diehard out there grinding still and will until the closing bell, but I think the general season ends like January 8th or something like that, and then if you're in an area with an extended season, maybe it goes through the end of January, but hey, you don't have that much time left, and I know a lot of you are starting to think about other things. You're thinking about Christmas. You're thinking about family time. You're thinking about maybe doing a little ice fishing. For a lot of you, the whitetail season has now finally come to an end, and over the next couple of weeks, we're going to cover several different topics. We're not just going to talk about whitetails, but I am going to hammer a little bit on not only some late-season hunting, but also some post-deer season, let's call them chores, that you should be doing. Now, that doesn't mean you should be out there in snow up to your knees trying to do work on your property. What it does mean is that you should take the opportunity to, you know, start by sitting back and asking some real serious questions about your season. Did I have the kind of season that I wanted to have? Did I see the kind of deer that I wanted to see? Were the deer moving around me like I thought they would? Were my setups dialed? Was my access right? Was I busting deer on the way in and on the way out? Or was I getting in clean? Was I able to have encounters with the deer that I was looking for? And that doesn't mean, hey, was I having encounters with 4.5-year-old deer every time? That may not be your goal. But were you meeting the goals that you had set for yourself? Maybe that was, you know, tagging your first buck. Maybe that was, you know, getting within bow range of a 2-year-old buck. Maybe that was just filling up the freezer. Whatever your goals were for this year, were you meeting your goals? And if not, what was going wrong? Like, what was holding you back? And so toward that end, I had my buddy Sam Billhorn on again from Whitetail Partners. And man, I really like having Sam on. He's one of those guys that just thinks really critically and really carefully about everything he does, especially when it comes to whitetail hunting. So I wanted to have him on to kind of walk us through a couple of things. Number one, how do we process our deer season? Like, how do we think about what just happened to us and whether or not we were successful, whatever that word successful means to us. And then number two, how do we start to think about our property and whether or not we might benefit from somebody like Sam coming out and, you know, giving us a second opinion about our property or what we might be able to do to make our hunting property better. And as usual, Sam knocks it out of the park on this one. Lots and lots and loads of good information in this podcast, including some updates from him when it comes to the Whitetail Partners business. And some exciting news, Whitetail Partners is now the official property consultant for the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast. Now, what that means is a couple of things. First of all, Sam's going to be the guy who is coming to you every once in a while here on the show to talk all things property design, habitat layout, improvements to your land, improving your hunting, general hunting strategy, all that good stuff, kind of like he's been doing, but I'm going to try to get him on a little bit more often. This also means that I have joined the Whitetail Partners team as part of Whitetail Partners down here in Georgia as we expand. You're going to learn more about that in this week's episode. But for you folks in Wisconsin, Sam is still your guy. You can find him on Instagram at whitetail_partners_Wisconsin, or you can also find him at the main page at whitetail_partners. Maybe you've got a new property that you need help setting up for hunting. Maybe you're looking for some new strategies and approaches to connect on your target buck. If you own property and you're interested in taking it to the next level, Whitetail Partners is your go-to property consultant to make it happen. Whether it's a basic online consultation, a complete on-site property review with a habitat and hunting plan, whatever you need, Whitetail Partners has a service to help meet your goals. To learn more, contact Whitetail Partners owner Sam Billhorn. You can find him, like I said, on Instagram at whitetail_partners_Wisconsin or at whitetailpartners.com. And hey, he even gives out his phone number during this episode. So if you want to just give him a call, give him a call. And when you reach out to him, let him know that I sent you his way. But there's a load of good information in this episode. He also has a ton of great stuff on his Instagram account where he is constantly putting up just super, super good information. So even if you never have Sam out to your property, give that a look. It's an incredible resource that he provides. Now, as we jump into today's show, a couple of housekeeping items. Number one, if you're not already following me on Instagram, please go and do that at the Wisconsin Sportsman. To be honest with you, I don't really know what to do with myself now that deer season is over. I still have not jumped into the world of ice fishing, but I want to have some guys on to talk ice fishing this winter. So if you know somebody or if ice fishing is your thing, please, please reach out to me. I would love to talk with you about ice fishing, about how to get into the sport. To be honest, coming from the South, it's super intimidating to me, so I would love to learn more about it. Last winter, I spent a ton of time reaching out to guides all around. Not a single one wanted to come on the show, and I guess I kind of get that. They're protecting their fishery maybe, but I don't know. Whatever it is, they didn't want to come on the show. So if you want to come on and talk ice fishing, then please do reach out. Instagram is the best way to do that. I'll usually get back to you within a day or so. So go give me a follow there. Also, if you're not already subscribed to this podcast, go ahead and do that as well. And while you're at it, leave us a 5-star review and a written review if you can do that. Next up, thanks to our partners that help us make this show possible. First up, Tacticam. They're the makers of the best point-of-view cameras for hunters and anglers. And guys, I got to tell you, they're running some deals right now that are phenomenal. And guys, you've heard me say before, I've been running the 5.0 and the 5.0 wide camera from Tacticam. And right now, the 5.0 is on sale for like $99. Now, their 6.0 is out. It's incredible. It's got an LCD screen on it. It's awesome. They took image stabilization up a whole other level with that camera. But guys, a 5.0 for $99. Like, you cannot beat that. Head over to their website now, tacticam.com. All their gear makes awesome Christmas gifts, awesome stocking stuffers, especially at that $99 price point. Man, I couldn't believe it when I saw that. So go check those guys out, tacticam.com. Next up, Huntworth. We are getting into the late season, and you are going to want to check out their Heat Boost line. Looking at temps for the area that I like to hunt in Wisconsin, it looks like the high this coming week, one of the days is going to be like 12 degrees. So if you're still out there grinding and you're doing it from a tree stand, you need some clothes that are going to keep you warm. Huntworth has you covered with their Heat Boost line. I've been wearing the Saskatoon gear. When you start getting into some of these single-digit temps, it's probably about the right time to beef it up a little bit, maybe with something like the Matterhorn gear. But like I said before, I wore the Saskatoon pants, jacket, and vest down to the upper teens and was really comfortable in that. So who knows? You might be able to just layer underneath it and be totally fine. I just don't personally have any experience in those single-digit temps just yet. But you can go check out all their gear, huntworthgear.com. And then finally, this episode is brought to you by the Onyx Hunt app. Onyx gives you up-to-date landowner information, color-coded public and private land boundaries, and a ton of tools to help you hunt smarter. One tool that I have been loving is their optimal wind feature, which lets you set the optimal wind for a given location. Then it's going to tell you in real time whether the wind is good, bad, or just okay for that spot. As we now get into the late season, or especially as we get into doing some postseason scouting, Onyx is going to be huge, not only identifying new properties, but in helping you scout new areas that you want to cover for next year, or maybe even scout those areas that you hunted a bit this year, but you didn't really want to dive all the way in. Well, now's the time. Go ahead and dive in. Take your Onyx Hunt app with you. Mark the stuff that you need to mark. If you're not already using Onyx, you can try it free for 7 days. You can find it on the app store of your choice or go check out their website, onyxmaps.com. Now let's get into this week's episode with Sam Billhorn of Whitetail Partners. All right, joining me for this week's episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast once again is Mr. Sam Billhorn from Whitetail Partners. Sam, welcome back to the show.
Hey, happy to be here, Josh. Thanks again for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming back on. Your voice sounds a little bit better than when I talked to you last week.
Yeah, I've been a little raspy recovering from having been sick here the past week, so forgive me of that.
Yeah, well, if you cough a few times, that's all right. We'll make our way around it. But hey, Sam, how's your season been so far?
I've had a really great year. It's been, you know, just a refocus of for me to just enjoy being outside. And I've done most of my hunting has been with others, especially with my son. I've lost track of how many times we've been out hunting, and it's just been a joy to watch him kind of, take ownership of things and love doing it. He killed a deer this fall too, earlier in archery season. We had some good action during rifle season here recently, and, had a couple opportunities we weren't able to capitalize on, but just really been enjoying being out. And then for myself, I've really made a point of hunting a lot of different areas across the farm and seeing what's going on. You know, I have a couple bucks I'm still interested in, but I know that just the way that they are operating, that it's going to be a tough one for me here. Perhaps late season I'd still close, but I've kind of known that all along. You know, we have it's 7 or 8 3-year-olds now that are doing really well, and we've been able to have that age class be strong this year. But the couple 4-year-olds we had, one has seemed to have disappeared, so maybe fell on another property, and the other one fell to a neighboring bow hunter who I know really well, and happy for him and how that went down too. So it's been a good year, and enjoyed so much of it. But it's quickly turning to habitat season here now for us.
Yeah. So when it comes to hunting in the late season, I mean, is this a time where you typically find yourself still with a buck tag in your pocket, or is this a time that you're not normally getting after them very hard?
You know, and it's funny you mention that, because I'm not normally hunting this late into the year with still with a buck tag, and that has been. It's been fun to go out there with a muzzle loader. I mean, the past 2 years haven't had that, and to enjoy that, all these different seasons we have in our state. Still might get out with a bow here yet, like I said, kind of just watching from afar with the food plots and the cameras now, and having all my cameras kind of staged that way to target in on what's coming to the food plots. Have had some new bucks show up just even in the last few days, and some good ones at that, so. Yeah, I may not be done yet. We'll see how things go.
Yeah, when you get into the late season, so your farm is, have you said 40 acres? Is that right?
Well, we own 40 acres.
And then you've got a larger property.
Yeah, there's 40. Yeah, there's, well, it's, the greater farm is 400 acres, but I would say about 80 to 100 that we have strong control of as far as what we're able to do there and where we hunt. So I hunt effectively about on 80 acres.
Gotcha. When it mm-hmm. comes then to the late season, when you say to yourself, hey, I've got a couple of good bucks showing up, but I've got a strong crop of 3-year-olds, how mm-hmm. much does that play into your thinking when you're like, I don't necessarily want to bump all these deer onto the neighbors this time of year?
Well, actually, once the firearm seasons are done, I think 99% of hunters are done.
Okay.
And that's my, yeah. maybe my gut feel, or just what I see the activity of others die off. Now there's a few, like I said, I have one neighbor adjacent to me who's a good bull hunter, and he probably will be out. So I am mindful that way, but I'm actually a lot more aggressive because I feel I have nothing to lose, and I'm not worried about pushing a deer. I'm going to take those risks. I would say much more than any other time in the season that I will go into an area I haven't been in, push further back perhaps because trying to catch that buck coming to a food source at night. I'm definitely not doing any morning hunts at this point in time, unless by chance there's a kill plot or something I have one daylighting on. But you know, that's my approach. I'm actually very aggressive in the late season. I'm not worried about bumping a deer at all.
Interesting. Okay. So once that gun season's over, that's kind of your mm-hmm. trigger of like, okay, if I bump some 3-year-olds off the property that I'm hoping will be sticking around for next year, I'm not going to lose them all. Yeah. Whereas in a firearm season, you bump 7, you might lose 4 of them and you don't want to do that.
Firearm season, we are extremely careful. Yeah. We just hunt on the edges, and it's mostly with the kids, and it's more about the culture and the camaraderie than it is buck hunting.
Yeah, yeah. So heading into next year then, I mean, you said it's almost habitat season. What are you thinking about, or where are you rethinking maybe your own plan for your property as you're like, hey, you know, here's where we are. Here's how the property has performed. How long have you been sort of intensively managing that property?
So what I'm always looking forward to at this time of the year is getting out and dissecting the property. You know, so as soon as we're done hunting, and that's for our whole party, you know, we want to be considerate if some people are still at it. But as soon as we're done, it's getting out there, and I want to go over every square inch of the place. You know, on 80 acres, I might, without exaggeration, spend a day walking around. Okay. And what I want to see is, you know, how are the deer using this, perhaps especially differently than I expect them to. You know, I obviously on a highly managed property, almost every deer movement is predictable for us as far as where we expect them to be and why and all that. And it starts to ask questions of, you know, why is this bedding area being used so much, or why is this bedding area being used so little? Or, you know, whatever that case is as a property goes, you're never done. You're always looking at it to say, you know, okay, this bedding area, it's starting to thicken, or not thicken up, but you know, it's needing some maintenance. Maybe we need to rehinge cut some trees, or we need to go in there, and we don't want deer leaking out in this direction, so we're going to close that off. You know, all these little details, I think a lot of it revolves around travel. I want to see how deer are moving throughout the property, because that's how I intend to capitalize on those opportunities. And if they're taking some route I don't want them to, I'm going to change it. And those are the type of things where I'm making notes and mental notes out in the field as to what to do.
Yeah. So, and how long have you been managing that property now?
About 5 years now, coming up on five years.
Okay. I just wanted to highlight that, because what you just said, you know, you're going to walk every inch of that property, and you've had it for 5 years. So you've gone through this process five different times, but you don't sit back and say, well, I know the property, I don't need to go check that out. You're still getting out there and confirming what you suspect and believe is true of the property and the improvements that you've made.
Absolutely. You know,
and that's huge.
Hands down. And I would say one of the things that is most easily overlooked is open field development and food plots and those sort of things, because you say, and it's not just necessarily the type of crops you have or what you're putting in there, but the structure of that. I'm continuously making tweaks within the fields to segment plots, either with warm season grass or corn or plot screen, or, you know, edge feathering. If we've got a adjacent timber edge to manipulate that timber some more, I'm getting more and more into directing travel through plots, be it with, I do like a lot more clover walkways and even bringing in little strips of grass here and there just throughout the plot to give it a lot, you know, a lot more structure. It's not just, you know, this open rectangle of food. It's a maze and pockets and all these different things, because I want deer to be as comfortable in that plot as they are in my bed, you know, bedding areas.
Yeah. And that's something, you know, growing up doing food plots on hunting clubs and things like that, that is not something that we did really much of. We would occasionally plant, like if there was a fire break or a small, you know, an old dim road or an old logging road going out of the plot, we would plant that at times to kind of make it more predictable where the deer, how the deer would travel into the plot. But we left everything as kind of a destination. You know what I mean? It was just a rectangle or a circle or an oval of, or even an hourglass if you're trying to get fancy with some bow setups, but it's a destination for food. You know, we're trying to get deer into the plot, and that creates all kinds of problems when you, one, if you would like to hunt it in the morning or hunt that area in the morning, because you're blowing everything out of a destination food source. And number two, when you're getting out in the evenings, there's almost no way to get out without spooking some deer, because even if there are no deer in the field, they may be 10 yards into the woods and you don't even know they're there.
Those are great points. A couple of things that come to mind with that certainly is access and a concealed blind. I won't set up a hunting plot, whether you call that a destination or a travel plot or a kill plot, whatever type of plot that is. I won't create that hunting setup unless I can get in and out of that blind virtually at any time. Now, obviously, there's always a little bit of noise you can make getting in and out of a blind, and if you got a deer 10 yards in front of you, it's not perfect, okay? But I would say if you cannot exit from the rear and take the back door out of that place, that setup is somehow, it is flawed, and you have opportunity there to spook deer off your food, which is one of the number one things to avoid in any sort of hunting plot. Back on the travel side of the deer and the predictability of their movement throughout, like I said, the getting deer to move through a plot. So you might have a 2-acre plot, but if a deer enters that field, what is the probability that they're going to come to your bull range, whatever location that is or range that is? You know, I want to create opportunities for deer to move throughout a plot so that they will at least pass by that window with a high probability. And what I said before with clover walkways and different designs and screening, and I want to create the likelihood that a deer will come within bull range. A simple example of that that somebody could picture would be like a horseshoe. You know, if you're at the bottom of that U and that's your bull range, as you can shoot the bottom of that horseshoe, well, if deer can't easily cross through the middle of that horseshoe, they got to come around it. Well, then you're putting them into bull range. And different ways to do that would be like you're having not necessarily late season, but you could have apple trees at the bottom of that U. You could have corn standing in the middle of that to obstruct view, if nothing else, so that they want to come around. And then I find too, just they are more likely to travel on something that is of lower height. You might hear some guys cutting a trail right through their food plots. And this, I've done this before too, just taking a walk behind mower and blazing a trail from where they often enter the plot to come right by your stand, and they'll use it. They enjoy walking on either dirt or something that's lower than, you know, trudging through for them chest deep. Brassicas, for example.
Just want to take a quick minute to let you know that the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast is brought to you by Tacticam, makers of the best point-of-view cameras on the market for hunters and anglers. They're on the cutting edge making user-friendly cameras to help the everyday outdoorsman share your hunt with friends and loved ones. Their new 6.0 camera has a ton of upgraded features this year, but the one I'm most excited about is the new LCD touchscreen. In my mind, that is a total game changer. And one area Tacticam really shines is with their mounts and adapters that are made with the sportsman in mind. If you've tried to film your hunting and fishing excursions, you know just how frustrating it can be to try to get an action camera aimed just right or get it attached to your weapon or in a good spot for a second angle. Well, Tacticam makes all of that a breeze with their line of mounts and adapters. This fall, I'm going to be using their stabilizer mount on my bow with the 6.0 camera and their bendy clamp paired with the 5.0 wide camera for a second angle and to make sure I don't miss any of the action. To learn more and check out their full line of products, head over to their website, tacticam.com, and share your hunt with Tacticam. Before we jump into too much of what, you know, folks can be doing this time of year, and last time we talked, it was October. We were talking about kind of an October checklist. I want to get to some more of that December, January timeframe, get folks thinking ahead a little bit. But there's been some interesting developments with Whitetail Partners. Why don't you go into just a little bit of that and how you're building out a team?
Well, thanks for the opportunity to do that, Josh. And it's been a couple of years now in the making and that we have been talking about this opportunity we see across the country. One of the things that's difficult for a one-man operation or for one location is to serve clients at greater distance. You know, it's costly for travel and, to have the logistics of that work out all the time is not necessarily something that we can do. The diversity of our country and the whitetail habitat, and throw into that culture and hunting seasons and local knowledge and all this, it's very difficult for one person to be aware of all those things and put it all together. And seeing this opportunity and having a network of, you know, just knowledgeable people that I've gotten to know throughout the years in this industry, we teamed up and currently have a team of five people, including myself, that are serving a much wider range for clients across the country. So we have Jake in Michigan, Greg in Ohio, Lee in Tennessee, and Josh yourself in Georgia. And with that group and the experience that they all bring in their regions, which you've all been in for quite some time, at least your experience in that type of habitat, is fantastic. And this is, we kind of got the snowball rolling here now, and hopefully it'll start to pick up as we go. Really excited with the response we've had from clients, from our followers, from just everyone in general. It's been an exciting run. And the other thing that I should mention here too is, you know, I've been at this now for 4 years pretty heavily. And I think that one of the things that I saw with this too is, and I've been on the podcast before talking about, is how we, or how I have brought the highest quality plans and reports that we can produce. You know, I wanted to have excellent deliverables for people and get plans that weren't just a sketch, you know, plans that gave every detail as to how to set up a property. And in doing this too, I wanted to bring that level of quality to everybody. So we've been, you know, going through a lot of processes and, you know, getting our house in order to replicate that process for the clients wherever it is that we serve them.
Yeah, and that's something we've talked a lot about as this team has been forming, is consistency in what is provided, whether you're with Whitetail Partners Wisconsin or Whitetail Partners Ohio or Whitetail Partners Georgia, you're going to get the same level of service, the same deliverables, the same quality that you would get from, you know, what people have come to know of Whitetail Partners. It was really interesting. I had a phone call the other day. A guy was pretty excited that there's a Whitetail Partners now in their in his area. And he was like, hey, just want to see, do you come this far? And this guy works with Whitetail Properties, real estate. Mm-hmm. And he would like to build out where he can, you know, refer clients with a new farm. Hey, give this guy a call and, you know that they're going to be taken care of. So he was real excited. He said, because I don't know of any other habitat consultant in the game right now who's providing the level of detail that Whitetail Partners is. So that's one of the things that I was most drawn to and I think I'm most excited about, is knowing that that's one of the things that sets Whitetail Partners aside from the competition. So if people are thinking, hey, why should I use Whitetail Partners instead of, you know, this buddy that I know who's kind of done this a couple of times, it's like, well, one of the things is that report that you get at the end that's going to give you step-by-step of what you need to do with your property.
Yeah, that's a great point. The report is intended to be a how-to manual as much as a here's your plan. And, you know, we want to stay in our lane of consulting and of providing advice and helping take on the mindset of that owner. You know, every plan we create is going to be something that's tailored to that owner, how they hunt, what their goals are, because, and I've said this time and time again, given any one piece of property, the plan will look very different from owner A to owner B. And I think it's important to know that, you know, the customization there for that client is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, Sam, another thing that people probably don't know about you is you've recently added something to your resume in the realm of trophy photo taker.
So. Well, hey, now that's a fun story right there. That's a fun story. Yep. I had the pleasure of getting a text from you, and knowing where you were at just miles from my house, I forget. I think it was a bloody arrow is what I first saw. So I knew that there was something good coming. But long story short, yeah, Josh, you arrowed after, I don't know, 9 or 10 days of some hot, hard hunting, you arrowed a fantastic whitetail. And for those who haven't seen pictures on social, it's a heavy horn, 140-inch, just beauty from southern Wisconsin. But yes, so I knowing that, and I'm passionate about photography. Well, I'm a novice in it, but I love taking good pictures for people. And that was the first thing I asked, is if I could help take your pictures, and that was awesome.
Yeah, the first thing I said was yes. Yeah, yes, yes, please come do this. So, if you've been following on Instagram and you've seen the photos, those are all courtesy of Sam Billhorn. So. Well done, sir.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate you being there to help me capture that moment and celebrate. You know, that's one of the weird parts of being on an out-of-state hunt is you get done and it's like, who do I high-five? Like, you know, who's around me to high-five me? It's like, I made this trip by myself. I don't know.
Yeah, those tailgate moments are different then, for sure.
They are. So I appreciate you coming out to do that. But so, Sam.
That was a great day.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, yeah, that buck and that story is such a cool example. Even though I was hunting some public, seeing exactly what manipulated the deer movement and what had changed, and you know, the simple piece of a ditch flattening out and a tree falling during the off season that I didn't know had fallen changed the way the deer used that whole area by probably 75 to 100 yards. And, you know, finally figuring that out, I was able to capitalize on that, but it really just brought to mind like, wow, we can really, you know, when you're setting up a plan for someone, you can replicate nature and what nature is already doing out there to guide the deer through the property, which for me was just such a cool realization that, you know, a lot of what we're trying to do is replicate what we see happening out there already. What dictates deer movement? Okay, well, here's what we see dictating deer movement. So we want to do a man-made version of that in a couple of key spots and put you in the right position. Except, you know, as opposed to, you know, out on public land, you're just kind of at the mercy of what has happened. On your property, you can kind of say, hey, this spot works out really well for me, so I can kind of encourage the deer movement right where I want it.
Yeah, right on. And you saying that tree, I think all for those of us who are passionate about habitat improvement and all this, we could all reference that one tree. I mean, for me, it was on. I could take you to it. It's a 100-year-old oak tree that came crashing down. This is maybe 10 years ago, and seeing how that changed deer movement throughout the property was my aha moment too. Mm. To see it just how that can manipulate, you know, how that in nature happens, and now we want to replicate that. That's what so much of these habitat plans are about, is going in there and defining things, defining bedding, defining travel, just to name a few, and how that happens. Well, and I would say also a third, mock scrapes, you know, where we want to define where that happens. You know, so many of the, all of my hunting setups, I'll say, except for ones on food as much, if they're on a travel route and I have a deer coming in on that corridor, I'm not even thinking about shooting them until they're on that mock scrape, because I know they're going for it, you know, and that's that opportunity that I'm going to wait for.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. And, you know, maybe mock scrapes are something that we could probably devote an entire episode to at some point. And I say that because I've tried mock scrapes in the past, mixed success, right? Like, you have one that just takes off, you have another one that doesn't. What in the world is going on there? But then when I had the opportunity to spend some time with you, to go out in the field, to see how you set your mock scrapes up and how all of that works, and to see like, oh, the deer can't help themselves at that point. Like, it is all the way from fawns up to the most mature buck on your property. They can't walk by that thing basically without the vine hitting them in the face. I mean, they're going to come in contact with it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, typical corridor setup, and you've built them, you've seen them, is you had to take a strong movement that you already have, and you're going to, you know, make sure that's the only movement. Sometimes there might be a secondary movement or even several, that goes throughout the landscape. And you're going to put trees down on those conflicting corridors so that you basically block the deer from using it. And you're telling them you are going to use this one. And then that mock scrape is in your middle of your shooting lane at 25 yards. And it is on the perfect flat piece of ground that, and you arrange it in such a way that, yeah, it's right there. They have to walk around it. And they won't. They will at least give you a second at that location.
Yeah. And I just want to emphasize this point. I hear a lot of people talk about mock scrapes with mixed results. Your success rate on those kinds of mock scrapes on your travel routes is extremely high.
Oh yeah. 90% for sure. I mean, 9 out of 10 deer, like I said, they'd have to step around it. And they don't, they're all going to at least nose it. And some will spend 3 to 5 minutes there.
Yeah. I think that's huge. That's huge. Well, Sam, let's mm-hmm. pivot now. You know, we're in December. We're recording this on December 7th. We're starting to think about next year. I think it's a really good time for guys to sit back and reflect. I think you had this in your whitetail checklist for December, right? Mm-hmm. Sit back and reflect on your hunting this year. Where it met your expectations, where it didn't, where you think things could and should be better. I'm curious, what are some of those telltale signs for people that, hey, I need to make some improvements, tweak some improvements, give Sam a call to get his perspective mm-hmm. on my property because I didn't see what I wanted to see. And what I hope doesn't happen is people who say, well, I got a buck this fall, therefore everything on my property is fine, because that's not necessarily the case. It's easy to think, well, I got lucky, so therefore I'm just going to hunt next year exactly like I did this year and bank on that to happen again. That's not necessarily the case. So what are some of the things that you're thinking about that make you wonder, do I need to tweak some improvements? Do I need to change some things that, you know, what was dissatisfying for me in my hunting?
Well, that's a great setup. Good question. Good points too. And I particularly picked up on the one of, I'll say having a short memory, whether you were successful or not, that doesn't necessarily play into next year. Now you can confirm or deny how that happened and, you know, work to replicate that next year. But I would say it's starting from, and I will reference it again, looking at your property here now immediately following the season and seeing how it is functioning. You know, some of those, a couple more telltale signs before we go into that, like, you know, the risk of butchering the statement, I'll try and make it, is if you've done what you've always done, you'll get what you've always got, you know, something along those lines of, you know, did you hunt the same 3 stands repeatedly this year? Well, were you successful? And maybe you were, and that was because it is a perennially good spot, or maybe you weren't, and you need to rethink that's no longer my go-to spot. So that could be hunting setups. You know, are you utilizing all of your property, or is there, you know, the 40 or 80 acres that you just haven't been touching because you aren't sure how to hunt it or whatever that case might be. A lot of the recommendations I'm going to make in a plan revolve around hunting the travel of bucks and how they move across the landscape. So that's one of the key things I'm always looking for is, and one of the things I like to do is look at the travel routes across my landscape. Even, and I make the recommendation to people, turn on the tracking on your Onyx or whatever you use and go walk all of those trails, lay them down, see what's going on. And maybe you're not doing it for absolutely every single track you can find, but the ones that have been repetitive, I think will help show you what's going on in your property, and then ask the question, well, maybe is there a way to consolidate these by doing some timber manipulation or whatnot, and looking at them and saying, what are the best setups that I could do, or is there a setup I'm missing? Because sometimes, especially for those who've had a property for some time, you do get in a habit of doing certain things, and all of a sudden, you know, whether it's yourself realizing it or somebody else, there is one of the best hunting locations you had, you were you'd never hung a stand there. And it just became your habit of doing certain things. Another one is access. How are you getting to your property? One of the things that is easy to do is, we were talking about this before the podcast, was walking our logging roads, our various maintenance roads. Good exercise to do is say, where did I set foot on my property during hunting season? And just take the, you know, maybe you have a log of your hunts, or maybe just go from memory. Okay, when I went to this stand, just draw a line on your property where you went and go through this exercise. And all of a sudden, if you realize that you've crisscrossed your property 14 times throughout the season, well, you may be your biggest problem in how you're accessing stands. Another indicator, if you're looking at trail cams and that sort of thing, is did you acquire more bucks throughout the season, or did you acquire, or did you lose them? Did your numbers go down, your deer numbers too? You know, and this is something that on the very high on my list is, I think my doe numbers slipped a little bit, and it wasn't because we've been harvesting does, though we have been, because we know where our deer numbers are. But I think our bedding needs a tune up. You know, I think some of our bedding areas aren't being utilized as much as they have been in the past, and that's going to be a high priority for us. So what's the thing going on, and then starting to search for the cause.
This episode is brought to you by the OnX Hunt app. OnX gives you up-to-date landowner information, color-coded public and private land boundaries, and gives you a ton of tools to help you hunt smarter. One tool I'm loving right now is their optimal wind feature, which lets you set the optimal wind for a given location, then tells you in real time whether the wind is good, bad, or just okay for that spot. You can try it risk-free for 7 days right now. Just download the OnX Hunt app on your preferred app store today. As we begin to shift our minds to December, January, you know, a lot of folks are shifting gears. They're thinking, I'm going to be getting out on some hard water and doing some ice fishing, and you know, or whatever the case may be, maybe getting out pheasant hunting and that kind of stuff. But for those who are thinking, all right, let's get a jump start on some of this habitat work, what can we be working on right now, even with colder temps and maybe even with a little snow on the ground?
Well, as I mentioned with going through that walk and dissecting the property, I mean, the observations, the information is the most critical thing now, because it's just following the hunting season. So I know this is probably the third time I've said that, but what I would say, a couple ways to do even a better job of that is to have a few different colors of ribbon, a marking tape in your pocket when you're going out, and okay, this is something I want to block, or this is something I want to open up. And giving yourself those markers for later will be really helpful, because then you can go back and say, okay, I want to make this into a better corridor, or perhaps this bedding area, whatever those things are, is to have those ribbons out there in the field when you go to do that work. So that's definitely one to make those, to make better on that observations. Obviously taking notes is another good one. That's, it becomes difficult in the field sometimes to do that. But taking the time to write things down will organize your efforts later. As far as the habitat work itself, you can get after things with a chainsaw right away. Getting any sort of cuts done, your bedding areas, your corridors. I always tell people it's great if you can move quickly at seeing the sign and get that cutting done before you have heavy snow, especially here, you know, talking in the north. It becomes very difficult once there's a good amount of snow on the ground to move around, to be safe, and do all that. And the other thing with tree cutting at any time of the season here is to be sure that it isn't too cold. I don't want to be doing hinge cutting if the daytime temperatures aren't getting into the higher 30s or 40s. Because if you have frozen trees, they're going to be more brittle. You're going to have more loss in your cutting. And if you're in particular doing hinge cutting, that is counterproductive to what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah. So this time of year, then, are you employing, so obviously you're going to be doing some hinge cutting and that kind of thing. Are you employing other methods of TSI? Are you girdling anything? Are you just felling trees totally? Or are you going to save that work for more in the spring?
Yeah, so you can do all of those things. I'm not much on girdling. I don't like seeing the dead standing trees. I'll just fell them, put them on the ground. I'm pretty comfortable with that. But other things that you can be doing in December is looking around and seeing what you want to add in spring. You know, every year we're putting 400 or 500 trees onto our property, and bare root plantings, the conifers mostly, but hardwoods and soft mass and some other trees as well. But looking and making your list and getting that order. And a lot of these places, these nurseries that handle bare root trees, there's some of the more popular species that will, even in December and January, they'll close those out. They're sold out because they only get so much stock, or they have only committed to so much, and then you won't get those in. So this is definitely one of the things you got to plan ahead further on is your bare root tree orders to get those done. Mine's already in, for example, here in early December for spring, but to get after those for sure. And it's never too early to look at other orders too. You know, your food plots, maybe you want to lay those out a little bit and think about the architecture of how you might want to change that. Maybe it's bringing in a new crop that you haven't had, or developing screening where you haven't had that before, and some of those things that you certainly could get after that in those open field setups.
Yeah. So on that line of getting your tree orders in and maybe doing some cutting, kind of setting up bedding areas, first of all, it's a really good time of year to do some cutting as well, because you get those tops coming down later, in this winter time frame, that's putting some food on the ground really, really quickly and really effectively. Maybe you've got nothing but harvested crop fields all around you. This could prove pretty beneficial to the deer, and at least get them in those pockets relatively quickly and get them acclimated to those areas. As we're thinking about bedding sites, though, you mentioned yours might need a little bit of a tune-up this year, and we're making tree orders. Mm-hmm. We're thinking through how we're going to set this bedding area up. What are some maybe like bedding area do's and don'ts? Because I think this is a really good time to focus there, because if you can focus there now, give them spring, summer, fall, where we're just staying out of it, leaving it alone, it's only going to help you, right? So what are some do's and don'ts when it comes to trying to set up a bedding area? Maybe some mistakes you've seen made, or some, you know, hey, that we made this really thick spot and nothing's in it. What's happening?
So some basics for starters, and when we talk about bedding areas, typically we want to be creating good cover, good side cover, both visually so that they feel safe in there, they can hide and that sort of thing. I'll always say this just with a smile, is you can never undercut a bedding area. You know, most of the time that's the problem I see, is people just drop a few trees, they pinch half a dozen trees here or there, and you look up and there's no light getting in. Those hinge cuts are likely going to die, and they weren't enough cover to begin with. In general, you need to open up that canopy something to the effect of at least 50% or more of those big canopy trees coming down, and that's going to give you your major structure for your bedding area. So these are the trees that are going to, they're going to hang up. These aren't hinge cuts. These are trees that are felled, and those branches will hang up high. They're good for your subsequent cuts to hinge down upon. And when you're done, you're going to have a very cluttered, thick mess, to be honest, that you can look up and have a lot of sunlight coming down. And I think another common mistake there too is only working within that pocket. Maybe you're working on a quarter acre or a third acre pocket, but you didn't cut any trees beyond that. Sometimes you need to cut a couple of canopy trees a little wider, because that sunlight doesn't come down through a tube. You know, it needs a little bit more of an opening that way. Another mistake is once you're to that point is being, you know, quitting, being done. Say we did it. If you leave it in a tangled mess that you can't go through, and think of kids perhaps, you know, climbing around in and around and through the trees. If it's just a brush pile that's impenetrable, the deer aren't going to go into it either. So you want to have that area be cleared out, and what I mean by that is just you want to make several routes through it, in, around entrance, exit, kind of just a maze throughout that whole area. I would say on a quarter acre bedding area, you might have a couple hundred yards of trails within it that wind through and clear out, you know, and then obviously the beds themselves, getting into the details of actually clearing a spot, raking it out down to dirt. You can put a backlog in there. Some of those details, when you're doing this work, a lot of that cleanup and detail work, you can't physically do as easily in the winter with the frozen ground. That's a perfect activity to do in the spring when you can come back and kind of see how it's being used, and even check it in the summer to make sure that another tree hasn't fallen down and blocked an entrance or something like that.
Yeah, I think that may be something that a lot of guys overlook, is that having the ability for deer to travel in and through the bedding area effectively. You know, I've seen before attempts at cutting where you may have some deer using it, but you're really limited on the number of deer that can use it, because really they can only bed on the outside. They're not going to walk through a brush pile or jump into a brush pile to get into this bedding. And then also some of the best bedding that I have found that's just naturally occurring is when you've got a thicker pocket. But think about when you walk through it, some of the marshy areas that I really like to hunt, you know, you've got red dogwood and all that stuff down in it. Yeah, it's really thick. Yes, it's really gnarly, but there are sufficient areas for you to walk through as a person can fit through there. It's, you're not just pushing through the brush continuously. And those are the sites that seem to hold the highest number of deer, is where you can have this larger area with sort of almost like honeycomb pockets of denser cover, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that's just based on observation of what I've seen, not necessarily what I've created. But have you seen the same thing?
Yeah, I think you hit that well. And back to the comment before of replicating nature, deer do want to have some separation within those areas too. So like you described, having that, you know, those honeycomb is a great example, especially just for people to picture in their mind. A simple example I'll give is if you have a brushy kind of an old field habitat where you have little pockets here and there of where deer are going to bed, you know, throughout it. But there's one main trail that runs through that whole area. You know, a deer can veer off to the side. Maybe they're bedding underneath a honeysuckle bush or something like that. And you can replicate that. I do it with a mower, is go into an old field and I say, here's the main trail through this field. And then I'll spin off of that with the mower and mow just a 10-foot radius little pocket down to dirt and, you know, get back on my trail and walk out. So, you know, you can replicate this in any type of setup. You talk about a lowland setup. Mine's maybe an upland brushy field. And we talked about timber before, all very similar in that you want numerous bedding areas throughout, and also then options for travel coming in and out of that.
Yeah. So I'm curious now, we've probably got some guys listening who have done some habitat work on their property. They've tried to maximize, they've tried to put in some features that are going to hold the deer with bedding, that are going to influence movement, and maybe they're not satisfied with their results. Like maybe they've done it themselves and they're kind of like, where did I go wrong? If that makes sense. So what are some of those key things that you've noticed? Maybe it's with travel corridors. Maybe it's with your food plot setup, where guys have, you know, put in the work, well-informed, but it just, they didn't see the results that they were hoping to see.
I think one of the most common things that come to mind in this subject is always, that the improvements relate, that they work together. And it's possible that a guy can say, okay, bedding, I need bedding. Well, I'm going to put that on this. I hear south-facing slopes are good. I'm going to put it on the south-facing slope. And all right, we've got an improved area and they're going to bed there. Well, his main access into the hunting land is right there, and he walks by it every time he goes out to his setups. You know, that probably wasn't a good choice from the standpoint of how he had to access the land. And maybe he has a different means of accessing it, but I mean, obviously that's where our recommendations come in, is to look at something and say, it isn't about understanding just what a feature is and how to do it. The where part of it is equally important. If you're, you could have some of the best looking habitat and be very desirable for whitetails, but only if you never hunt it because it's unhuntable. Your access to your stand or your stand itself, you have one opportunity to do that, and that's the first and only time you hunt it because after that, it's just screwed up. And I think that that's by far the most common thing whenever I see improvements is that it was perhaps in the wrong location. Another thing that I think of too, as it relates to these things is the order in which things are in. You know, we have, when we want to develop travel, it's often, we talk about generically bedding to food, food to bedding, but where we put improvements within that in the order that we have it is very intentional too. I think a simple example we talk about every now and then are water holes. A water hole is a highly attractive element to a property. I don't like seeing them in the open sunshine of a food plot. For me, well, one, just the functionality of keeping them in the shade so that they're more likely to be filled and all that, and also secluded and these different, some other aspects that come into how deer use them, and also not wasting that improvement on a food plot, for example. You know, the deer are already coming there for the high water content food that's there, and that's why they're there. They don't also then need a water hole. It's better off placing that, you know, 80 yards back into the cover where you have a hunting opportunity to catch that buck more in a staging area that he's coming into that plot. So anyway, a couple examples of the where those placements are tied to it. In particular, hunting access is probably number one.
Yeah, I really like that. And that was actually where I was hoping you would go, is how these features function together. Because as I've talked with guys about, you know, habitat improvements, they've done a lot of good work, and maybe even their execution of that specific thing was really good, but it just doesn't quite relate well to either their access or the food or the travel or the bedding. It's just a few little tweaks, you know, and the difference between something being really well used and your improvement not being well used can be so minute. You know, it can just be a little off, and maybe you can tweak it and begin to improve it this year. How quick are you seeing bad access mess up a property? Let's say an average property, 40 to 80 acres that a guy is hunting. How quickly are you seeing poor access mess that property up? Because I grew up, and one of the ways that we hunted a lot was we hunted a lot of food plots, especially in the afternoons. And the food plots were well used to fill up with does, all that good stuff. But gosh, I think most of the plots, you had to walk through at least a part of the plot to get to the stand, to get into the blind or wherever it was, because it was just, that was the simple way to do it, right? You drive your tractor in, you plant the plot, you pull your tractor out, and then you got to stand off to the side because you don't want it on the road because you got to get your tractor through there. So you end up having to walk through the plot every single time you access that, which means deer are going to smell you every single time. So how quick do you see that having an impact?
Well, in the example you gave of a small property, that impact is it's the first hunt, and it's sustained throughout the season as long as you use it. I'd say only someone that can get away with this is somebody that has several hundred acres and dozens of setups that they can go in there and wreck one. Because the next night they can go across the road to the other part of the farm and have a as good of an opportunity over there because they haven't wrecked it. And meanwhile, the first spot is cooling off, so to speak. Now, we'd never want to have any of that in a setup that we're going to create. And that's why, you know, when I say hunter access is number one, sometimes, you know, you look at a property for somebody and you're going to look and say, you have identified three of the top five hunting locations here. And good job. You clearly see how the deer are moving across the landscape. You know patterns. You know when to hunt those stands. That's another thing we haven't talked much about is, you know, giving instruction on when to go to a certain set. Even if they're doing all those things, but we'll correct their access. We'll say, hey, rather from coming in from the right, you're going to come in from the left from now on. And during these hours and these days and all that, and give them something new in that they're no longer having their use of that land during the hunting season wreck their hunt before it starts.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, really good. So, all right, Sam, we're getting into December, January. It's about that time where guys are thinking about what to do. They should probably be giving you a call to get on your schedule if that's something that interests them, if that's something they think they could benefit from. Where would you point folks to either get a hold of you? And you know, if I've just got some questions and maybe I'm not ready to commit yet, but I want to talk with you first, is that okay? Like, is it all right to just reach out?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the social media website, you can learn about what I have out there as far as that goes, at Whitetail Partners on Facebook, Instagram, and whitetailpartners.com is the website. Looking forward to an overhaul on that website here shortly, but lots of great information out there. But to your question of, hey, what can you do? Or I don't know what I need even. Where do we even start with this? My phone number's on all those locations, or if somebody wants to write it down now, it's 608-572-7035. Call me. I'd be happy to have a conversation about what you have going on, what type of thing could be the right service for you, for your needs. We have basic services that are as simple as a couple-hour Q&A session where we sit down and go through your property on a shared Zoom meeting, as extensive as multi-day visits to properties to dissect them, come up with a full scale plan and give every detail like we've talked about in this podcast, and anything in between that. You know, sometimes we'll work on even a virtual design where we give some of the basics of how to go about setting up a property, and that's more of a middle price point on that. But yeah, to that end, go online or give me a call, and I'm happy to help you out.
Awesome. Well, Sam, thanks for your time today. Appreciate you coming back on. Look forward to talking again.
Yeah, Josh, thank you for your time very much.
That's all for this week's episode. If you dig this podcast, be sure to go and subscribe wherever you find your other podcasts. If you would, please go leave us a 5-star review. I'd very much appreciate it. You can follow along with all my outdoor adventures on Instagram at The Wisconsin Sportsman. That's also the best way to get a hold of me. Big thanks to our partners, Tacticam, Huntworth, and Deer Lab. Please go support the brands that support this show. And until next time, make sure to take the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.